The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
Well, we're heading to Wexford for my first guest this morning, and one half of a creative team based in County Wexford, but not from County Wexford. Irina Prochenko and Lana Grishina left Ukraine last year and have based themselves in Wexford. Irina joins me this morning to tell me more about her Imago photography studio and their life before they settled in Ireland. You're very welcome to the Sunday Grill. Irina, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
Good stuff. You and Alana have started a photography studio in Wexford, but you both had very different creative jobs when you were living in the Ukraine where you're from. Tell me a little bit about what you were both doing there.
We both studied at Ukrainian fashion school. We both were the fashion clothes designers.
Okay.
We both had a clothes brand. I had a yoga clothes brand, and Alona had a brand of street style clothes.
And did you know each other before you came to Ireland?
Yes, sure. Yeah, we studied in one class in our fashion school.
Ah, so you went to college together?
Yes.
Okay. And how was business going in the Ukraine living there? You were building up a good business, were you?
Yes. About 5 years ago, I finished one of year of fashion design school, and my diploma work was to create the first fashion collection of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I was inspired with yoga. I studied at Yoga Federation, and I wanted to find some beautiful clothes for my yoga classes. And I decided to create it yourself because I didn't find something what I really like. So my diploma work was the first collection.
Okay.
It was very elegant, beautiful, bright, special clothes for women. Yeah, I really love it.
So you're doing something completely different now, and we'll move on to that in a minute. But when did you arrive in Ireland, and who did you arrive in Ireland with?
I arrived in Ireland 6 months ago.
Okay.
On March. I had a friend in Ireland. Before the war, I moved to Bulgaria 2 days before the war because we worried about situation. Yeah, and when I was in Bulgaria, my friend called me and said what Ireland are open to invite Ukrainians and Irish people ready to help Ukrainians a lot. And he organized the article in newspaper, and they wrote my story, and he tried to help me to find accommodation in this way.
Okay.
So a lot of people proposed the accommodation, and we chose one option, and we also had a lot of another options.
Right.
And my friend proposed me to help my friends.
Okay.
Yes. So together we helped a lot of Ukrainian families.
Brilliant.
Come here.
So are you living
Yes.
in Wexford town now? And are you living with a family or in a hotel? Where are you living?
I live in Ballygarry.
Okay.
In Ballygard. One of that friends was Alona.
Okay.
Yeah, Alona lives in Ballymoney.
Okay. So there's a few creatives from the Ukraine living in County Wexford now. Is that right?
Yes. One more, our friend, fashion designer, also live in Ballyconnew.
And how are you finding Wexford? Do you like it?
Yes, we like a lot.
Good stuff.
We like.
And did you come over on your own, or did you come over with family?
I arrived with my kids.
Okay. And your own parents, where are they right now?
Oh, my parents now in small town in Kharkiv district in Ukraine.
Okay, so they're still in
It's
the
called,
Ukraine.
yes, they're still in Ukraine. They were occupied during 6 months, and I had no communication with them.
Oh, wow.
And last week we started to communicate
Oh,
again.
brilliant. And how are they doing?
We're fine. Fine. They still have no electricity, have no water. Yeah, but now things become better.
Okay, good. And
Normal life start to come back there.
okay, fingers crossed. And I hear this story a lot of older people seeming to stay in Ukraine. Is that a thing that older people, they seem to have decided to stay?
I guess in my country, older people very connected to their houses and to their land. For them, it's like the part of them, and it's very difficult to live for them.
Okay. Wow, it must have been
And
very
I,
tough for you knowing there was a war in your country and that your parents were there.
yes, sure, yes, sure. I worry a lot about them.
Okay. So let's talk about your photography business, which you've started in Wexford. Why did you decide to start the business?
I was engaged in photography before my yoga clothes brand, and I wanted to talk about Alona also. She also had a brand,
Okay.
and she's also designer, and she's good in stylistics.
Okay, great.
And yes, and we both decided to create creative team. Alona help with ideas. She organized the view of shooting with great ideas.
Great.
And I work as photographer.
Okay.
Yes, and we both like to bring the beauty in this world. And we think what it's nice to help people to see their inner beauty. Yes.
And you've already styled and photographed some fashion shoots, already here in the southeast, haven't you?
Yes, we did, and we were very happy to do this. It's
Brilliant.
like a fresh breath for us after everything we had in our life. It's like we start to feel alive again. It really makes us happy.
That's brilliant to hear. And is your intention to go home to Ukraine, Irana?
As for now, I think I love Ireland, and Alona also. We love people. We love Irish people. We love Irish nature, very beautiful. And as for now, we would like to stay here.
Okay. So you feel at home here, do you?
Yes,
Okay.
exactly. I
Okay.
feel very calm, harmony here.
And it sounds like you have a good community of people from Ireland and people who have come over from Ukraine as well. So you're making a good community.
Yes.
And that's so important, isn't it?
Yes, it's very important.
So your photography studio is called Imago, and people can check you out on Instagram. You do lots of different things. You do a lot of photography of people as well. So if people are interested in maybe getting their family photographed, you do stuff like that as well, don't you, in your studio?
Yes, sure. I guess it's the main direction. We love to take picture of kids, of families.
That's great. Well, if
Yeah, and also we love fashion direction. We took picture for our friend here. She is also fashion designer. She create beautiful knitted dresses,
Lovely.
handmade. Yes, and we made a nice shooting for her also here.
Great. Well, if you want to check out what Urana and Ilona are doing, they are Imago Photography Studio on Instagram. That's Imago. And that is Urana Prachenko. Urana, thank you so much for joining me and chatting to me this morning.
Thank you so much, also.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102 103.
It's a Sunday morning in October, and you're listening to the Sunday Grill here on Beat 102 103. And October is ADHD Awareness Month. And Claire Toomey is a professional advanced ADHD coach with her own experience of ADHD. And as part of the Awareness Month, Claire has a whole range of activities and events planned to highlight and celebrate ADHD. And she joins me this morning to tell us more. You're very welcome.
Orla, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
It's lovely to talk to you. And I'm very interesting to talk to you because I think there's been a lot of conversations recently about people being diagnosed with autism, for example, at a later age. But you were diagnosed with ADHD in your late 20s.
Yes, that's right. And it's funny because when I went for the assessment process, you know, all of the signs had been there, right? Okay. So part of the diagnostic process is, you know, they'll ask you, have you got reports from your school days? And so when I was reading these back myself, you know, every teacher commented on how I was daydreaming, spent a lot of time talking, needed to apply myself more, you know, grades does not reflect ability, distracted easily, right? So, you know, it was.
So these weren't specialized reports. These were just your school reports. There was never a mention of maybe you having ADHD.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, absolutely not. Because when I went to school, Orla, it was understood to be something that presented in boys and that it was really hyperactive and that it was attached to challenging behavior, you know, the term kind of bold, right? Mm-hmm. So there was it wasn't understood for it to be something that girls or women could experience.
Okay, so bring us then to your late 20s. Why were you looking for a diagnosis?
So when I went to college, college had been extremely challenging for me for many different reasons. I experienced some trauma, and also the dynamic is so different from school, right? You go through your whole education experience up until 18, where the teachers are guiding you and directing you, and there's this curriculum and a schedule made out for you. And then you land into university and it's self-led, and if you don't go, no one cares, and it's really, really overwhelming. So I, you know, fell between the cracks, experienced mental health challenges, and it meant that I had dropped out. Okay. So I went back, obviously, and got my degree in the end, but I had done some therapy. I had done some counselling and things like that, and did a lot of work on myself, and things had been going really well and was progressing in my career. But I'd still noticed, you know, the kind of emotional dysregulation and the overwhelm. And I just kind of was talking to my mom one day, and I was like, yeah, like I've done all this work, but I'm still not sure about what this is. And I think, Orla, actually, like all the work that I had done had created so much more awareness and understanding of myself for myself, right? So I knew myself better. And my mom was like, Claire, when you were in school, I always queried ADHD, but everyone told me I was being ridiculous. And I was like, what? So I went and did some research about it, and, you know, kind of was like, yep, do that. Yep, that applies. Nope, maybe not that one. And I was really, really interested. So went to speak to a psychiatrist. He referred me for an assessment. And I spent a whole day in St. Patrick's Mental Health Hospital. At the time, they had an ADHD clinic. So that's where I went. And, you know, halfway through the day, I was like, yeah, I know what you're going to tell me at the end of the day. It just became so apparent. And it was like a light bulb, right? Because now things made sense, right? Now I knew how my brain worked and what I could do about it. And I was quite, like, it was emotional, right? Like there's grief attached to it because you've spent so many years struggling and trying too hard and not meeting other people's expectations or things not unfolding the way that I had expected them to. So there's grief and sadness for that. But there was this huge relief because it was like, right, well, now I know what it is. Now I can go and do something about it.
So what were the sort of things that were pinpointed to you that you said, yep, that's me, that's me?
So one of the things I talk about a lot with current clients is there was like cognitive tests, right? So I was at a laptop and I was carrying out things about sequencing and mathematics and stuff like that. And it was the maths piece. right? And it was the frustration that I experienced in trying to complete these tasks with a timed expectation. I felt the pressure and it just made sense. And things came flooding back to me from how I would have experienced that in school. Okay. And maths was a challenge for me, excuse me, throughout the whole entire, my whole entire education. And I actually, in primary school, was taken out for extra help in like resource classes, right? And in the resource classes, had absolutely no problem in maths. And they were like, this girl's grand, put her back in the classroom, and went back into the classroom. And the same thing happened again.
Wow.
So it's not that I can't do maths or that ADHDers can't do maths. It's that we might not be able to do three sums in 15 minutes, okay, or we might not be able to work through the steps the same way that a neurotypical might be. So we might do the work differently. You know,
right. Okay. And then you say you knew what you could do for yourself once you got a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. What could you do then once you had that diagnosis? Was it about medication or what was it about? Okay.
So the first path is a medication path. So I had explored that because I had been on antidepressants and anti-anxiety tablets over the years. So this, you know, I was quite open to trying this. But also, and this is how I got into coaching, I met with a coach, right? So the team, the hub that were supporting me through the diagnostic process, they were like, there's this coach called Heather Blackmore. She works with ADHD. She has ADHD herself. And I was like, yeah, let's give this a go. And, you know, sitting in front of her, I worked with her for 2 years. I learned what ADHD is, right? I learned how it works. I learned what parts of me are ADHD and are not. And I learned, I developed and created strategies on how I would carry out an assignment or how I would process my emotions or how I would problem solve or what I needed to give me to make sure that I had enough dopamine levels and enough energy throughout the whole entire day so that I could live and survive in a neurotypical world.
Okay.
Like I'm always talking to my clients that it's not that, you know, autism or ADHD is the problem or is something that has to hold you back. Like everyone's needs and levels are different. But in schools, you know, we're expected, or in workplaces too, right? We're expected to sit still for X amount of time during the day. And ADHDers, you know, can be really successful and can make their way through the workday, but they need to do it differently, right?
So that's really interesting because it's like what you said about like kids, like, you know, being called bold where they might need a diagnosis. But how does that manifest itself as an adult, because we're not called bold as adults. So if you're in an office setting, what is that? Are you disruptive? Or you know, how does that manifest itself?
So adults tend to find, with ADHD, can find workplaces quite distracting, especially if they're in open plan offices, right? So if there's a lot of noise or a lot of movement, it can distract them from the task or the pieces of work they're trying to focus on. The opposite of that is true also, right? Them being left in an office on their own with no interaction with anybody else. So like the pandemic has obviously brought up a lot of challenges for ADHDers because the working from home is not providing any kind of structure or support, right? But also, so there can be a delay and a difficulty with you know, holding our attention onto tasks, but also because we've had a past, a history of failed achievements and not meeting expectations, there's this there's limiting beliefs and this negative story we're telling about ourselves, and the constant need to get it right and to please people and to be able to do it. So that can often paralyze us and prevent us from starting on tasks for fear that we won't get it completed or that it's going to be difficult because we're going to have attention challenges.
Wow. I'm sure you're speaking lots of people's language this morning, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they need a diagnosis. So what can people do?
It's actually quite difficult to get a diagnosis at the moment because there's an influx of awareness and understanding of ADHD, like what you were saying about autism earlier, and people are, you know, sitting on 2 year waiting lists for some services. But I meet with people who've decided that they're never going to get a diagnosis. They're just going to learn about how their brain works and what they can do about it, right? So ADHD Ireland are a fantastic organization. They offer talks and support groups. You know, that's your first port of call. Go in and make sure that you have a space where you can talk and be seen, right? So one of the important things that I talk about my clients is about identity and belonging. So in the support group space, you're sat in a circle of like 50 other people who are going through the exact same thing as you are. And that's hugely effective. And then the other thing I talk about is whether it's CBT or coaching, or like one of the things I've started getting into recently now is workshops, right? So putting yourself into spaces of learning what it is and then learning about what it is that you need, right? So it's about implementing strategies and processes that work according to your brain, not a neurotypical brain. So like I run a group of for Leave and Cert kids, right? A coaching group. And they're talking to me all the time about trying to study after they come home from school. And they're spending 3 hours forcing their brain, trying to take in this information, and it's not working. So I will talk to them about, well, how their dopamine levels have been depleted from sitting in the classroom for X amount of hours, potentially on a lot of subjects that they don't have, you know, interest in or passionate about. And they need a break. They need a dopamine injection before they come home and then address their study. So it's all about changing the routine and the way we expect it should look like and doing it differently.
Okay, interesting. Your website, if people want to check it out, is internalconnections.ie. I'm interested in what you said about you want to highlight and celebrate ADHD in the month of October, which is ADHD Awareness Month. What are you celebrating?
People's existence and the strengths that they have, right? There's so much stigma and shame attached to being labeled or to not being the same as everybody else. And it makes people hide, Orla, and people tend to mask, right? They're not being authentically themselves for fear of how other people will perceive it. And in this month, I want people to be seen, to be heard. And we're doing that through the ADHD Voices blog we have, where we'll be showcasing a new member of the community every day, and they'll be telling their story. But also highlight that ADHDers have strengths. Like there are specific jobs that ADHDers are really highly qualified for. The types of skills that we have in terms of creativity and thinking outside the box and problem solving and being on high alert in crisis situations. And we're hugely empathetic people. We can use our intuition and connect with people and get great understanding of what other people are going through. And it's there's just so much strengths that aren't highlighted, and people often see it as a disadvantage. And we want to change that narrative so that people can feel proud about who they are.
Okay, good stuff. Well, it is the month to do that because it's ADHD Awareness Month. Claire Toomey is part of internalconnections.ie. You can check her out on Instagram as well if you just search for Internal Connections, and you have so much going on in October and you have a whole schedule on your website as well if people want to check that out. Really interesting to chat to you this morning, Claire. Thanks a million for joining me on the Sunday Grill.
Thanks so much, Orla. Take care.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
My next guest this morning is a filmmaker whose award-winning documentary film opens Cork's 10th Indie Cork Festival tonight before going on general release on Friday. Sasha King is the director of Vicky and she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning. And before we talk to Sasha, let's have a listen to just 30 seconds or so of Vicky. You'll know who it is about straight away.
This is my medical file. This is when I got all the information back from copies from my solicitor. The original result was no abnormality detected. And then when they reviewed it on the audit, it says squamous cell carcinoma. Squamous cell carcinoma is cancer. I was just so shocked, to be honest. And I said, well, how bad? How bad is this? Is this still something that I can survive? And she said, no. Me, it was that day that I decided I'm taking back control of this.
And some gorgeous music in the documentary, Vicky, as well. As I said, filmmaker Sasha King is joining me this morning. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
So today is the big day. You're heading to Cork this Sunday to go to the premiere.
Yes, we're so excited to be in Cork for the opening film of the Indie Cork Film Festival. So, yeah, we're really honoured.
Are you able to watch your own work, Sasha? Are you one of those people who sits there going, you know?
Such a good question because, no, you're totally... I actually find it really difficult.
Yeah.
Because it just takes... It's such a process. It takes so long and there's so many moving parts until it's actually locked. And, you know, and also it's a harrowing story. So yes, it's tricky to watch. It's tricky to watch for me as the filmmaker because of the of knowing everything that went into you know, pulling it together.
Harrowing, but really, like, there's something just so heartwarming about Vicky Phelan. You know, as a person, if you take everything away that she's gone through, just as a person, she's just very warm and fun. I think I've met her a couple of times from interviewing her, and she really has an element of fun about her as well, doesn't she?
Oh gosh, 1,000,000%. I mean, she is just like, she's probably the best collaborator I will ever work with. You know, she has a great sense of humor. She is so positive. She's so inspiring. And you're right, like, the film is an inspiring story. And that, and she exudes that energy and positivity. And you know, when I met Vicky for the first time in Dublin, when we met to talk about the possibility of moving together on this project, that's what I got from her. I walked away excited, inspired, you know, completely just I just love her. I think we all do. We're really drawn to her energy. I mean, never mind, you know, everything else that she's done for us with her choices and decisions over the last few years. She's just a wonderful person.
Yeah, and it's just amazing to hear her story in the documentary, because even when I was watching it, when she talks about starting to research and where she could go next, I'm kind of thinking, I don't know how she even started that process, but she's just got such strength. When do you remember first hearing the name Vicky Phelan?
Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. Okay. I mean, I was one of probably, you know, anyone who saw the 6 o'clock news on that day in April in 2018 when she came out of the High Court. You know, I was one of those people watching the news as well. And when I saw and heard what Vicky was saying, I was completely floored. I mean, I could not move from my standing. I could not believe that this was this, you know, incredible Irish, you know, woman going through what she had gone through. And I wanted to reach out to her immediately. I mean, I just felt an overwhelming kind of need to connect with her and to apologize to her on behalf of the country and, you know, just connect with her basically. And that's what I did.
So when did you connect with her then?
Very shortly after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we met in Dublin, and I think I just mentioned there, but we met in Dublin, and I had pitched the concept of my portrayal of her and what was happening, and to her, and she loved it. You know, the events were unfolding very quickly. You know, Vicky is the whistleblower of the story. And then suddenly, because she didn't sign the non-disclosure agreement, you know, we were all informed as to what was going on. But, you know, the numbers of women women and families affected with that, those numbers were increasing on a weekly basis. And I, as a filmmaker, I thought it was just really important to get filming as quickly as possible and to document Vicky behind the media frenzy as well, in her downtime. You know, what makes this incredible Irish woman tick, you know, behind closed doors, and see her with her family and that kind of thing as well, you know.
So this has been years in the making, am I right in saying, like, plural years?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started filming with her in 2018 and 2019, and then a little bit into 2020, of course, and then COVID hit. But and then Vicky went to the States then after for her, you know, she was investigating another trial in America and going through that process over there. But she still sent videos, updates on her phone to me. So, you know, she's just an incredible collaborator. She really is. Once she and I decided we were going to do this together, that was it. You know, Vicky puts her mind to something, and then it's, you know, she's just all, you know, all kind of very, very productive person that way, just all guns blazing straight,
oh, yeah.
you know,
yeah.
straight into it. That. So,
yeah. So, of course, Vicky lives in Limerick, but she is from County Kilkenny and she's a real affinity to Kilkenny. Did you get to head to Mooncoin during your time filming?
Oh, I absolutely did. And I loved it. We had the pleasure of being invited to Vicky's parents' house, John and Gabby, and her Auntie Anne's house as well. And we also visited her old school in Mooncoin as well. So, yeah, we absolutely loved it there. And everybody was so kind and welcoming. Yeah, beautiful part of the world.
And it's a really intimate documentary in lots of ways. You really feel like you're having a one-on-one conversation with Vicky, but it's also an intimate documentary for you and a bit of a family affair as well. Your husband and even your children are involved in it. Tell us more about that.
Well, Bill Snodgrass is my husband and my producing partner. Mm-hmm. So him and I made the film, really. And his background is music and he's written soundtracks before, but he wrote the soundtrack for the film. But there's a title track that... I had this idea for an anthem for and from Vicky, mm-hmm. that we needed as the main piece of the main track, basically, in the film. So I kept telling Bill, you know, these are the ideas that I have. And he wrote that song called This Fight. And at the end of the film, Vicky says, "This fight was for you." You know, mm-hmm. she's talking to Manon Aheron. Mm-hmm. And and our sons sang it. Now, Tig has been doing singing for many years now. He's an incredible singer. But Tristan also joined in and on this track. So, yeah, it's really special. But I mean, besides that, it's a very special track just generally. Mm-hmm. And it's played over a very poignant, reflective mm-hmm. Scene, you know, towards the very end of the film, you know.
And are there any standout moments for you personally from the documentary that stay with you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I mean, it's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do I pick one or two? But I mean, Vicky in her kitchen signing the HPV consent form for her daughter Amelia. That was a very emotional day. Mm-hmm. That's a standout day for me because Vicky was just so happy to be able to do it, that she was still around to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. So it was a really poignant. And throughout filming, women involved in the debacle passed away.
Mm.
So, you know, we lost Emma Vic-Fahuna. We lost Ruth Morrissey. We lost Julie O'Reilly. So, you know, this is a really, really important film, I think, because it's documenting that period of time, that history, that time in history, and just clearly laying out what happened, as mm-hmm. well as, you know, seeing Vicky, the whistleblower, and the other contributors as well, Lorraine Walsh and Stephen Teep. Their stories are very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is such an important documentary, as you said, and it's also gorgeous. It's just lovely. I've seen it, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it on the big screen. It's at Cork tonight, but it's on general release from Friday, October the 7th. So I hope you get lots of cinemas showing it, because as you said, it's such an important thing to see. And that is the documentary, Vicky. The filmmaker is Sasha King. And Sasha, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you very much. And can I just say before I end that it was made with the support of Screen Ireland. And that's very important to say. They support great, great work in our country. So
brilliant.
Thank you.
Great. Sasha, thanks so much.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
Well, there's been so much talk about this week's film and it's never been about the film itself, really.
No.
Yeah. And what it's about. I've seen the trailer. I'm pretty confused.
Yeah, I've seen it and I'm pretty confused. So yeah. We're in the same boat. It's okay.
Yeah, we are talking about Don't Worry, Darling. I think this trailer was dropped maybe about 10 months ago. They really know how to up the ante when it comes to making people want to go and see this. But in the meantime, there's been all the, you know, the spitting viral video, the cast issues. Like, Gemma Chan is in it and there's been nothing about her.
Yeah.
So much so that I've forgotten that she's in it, and she's a brilliant actress.
Oh, Gemma Chan is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, ever since, oh my God, the wedding film from 2016, the Crazy Rich Asians.
Crazy Rich Asians,
she's
yeah.
just been, like, fantastic yeah. in everything she's been brilliant. In. She's actually been really great in. So.
Yeah, but because she's in none of this mania, we don't really hear mention of her. But
do you know what? Maybe that's a good thing.
No, I think it is. I think it's good for her. We are, of course, talking about Don't Worry, Darling, Harry Styles, Florence
Pugh,
Chris Pines, Gemma Chan, and, of course, Olivia Wilde in there as well. She's in this, but she's also the filmmaker. And she has made one of your favourite films, Booksmart.
Yes, I yeah. love Booksmart.
So she's a really good filmmaker. I'm very disappointed for her that it's all about her relationship with Harry and spitting and people falling out. You
yeah,
know?
But it is. It's funny because it's also a film about people. One person being adamant about what's going on is not real, and it's all a lie. And then so is the real life version of it. It's all craziness, like nobody's believing okay. Florence Pugh. And,
yeah. Very confusing. Let's have a listen to a clip from Don't Worry, Darling.
We men, we ask a lot. We ask for strength, food at home, a house clean, and discretion above all else.
Boys and their toys. At least we know they're getting work done.
Welcome to the Victory Project.
We're all here because we believe in the mission.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
What do you think they're really doing out there?
What do you mean?
The one thing they ask of us is to stay here. Where it's safe.
There you go. That is a clip from Don't Worry, Darling. I'm telling you, if a man asked me a few things just to keep the house clean, etc., I would say, don't worry, darling, I'm out of here.
But if it was Harry Styles, darling?
I would still say, clean your own stuff, mister. Oh. Right. So, okay. Is this a book? Or are we, you know, have we read this? Or is it, I think it is actually a screenplay.
Yeah, well.
It's a really weird one.
It's weird because, okay, it's set in the 1950s, like, as you can yeah. kind of tell by this, like, everyone has probably seen the trailer. It's like a 1950s, like, Florence Pugh is a housewife in the 1950s.
Okay.
And she's living with her husband, who is Harry Styles.
And they're American, are they?
They're all American,
okay.
yeah.
Okay.
And it's like this beautiful, like, 1950s glory village. You know, like, America, it's like the proper, like, utopia kind of a
yes.
place.
And it looks like that. I mean, like it looks like a 1950s Technicolor yeah. look to it. Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing because, like, it's these, all, like, basically all the husbands work in this place, special place called Victory. And
right.
it's like this secret thing and they don't know what goes on there at all.
Okay.
And it's basically the unraveling of her kind of figuring out what's going on around her. And okay. they're not allowed to leave certain boundaries and she does. And it's just kind of it's the fallout of that. But then it's like she finds out the secrets of what's real and what's true. And it's kind of like a Bad Mirror episode.
Okay. So apart from when she leaves Victory, are we always in that place? Do we ever see where the men go?
Yes, like we do later on, but okay. it's kind of the big twist, so I don't want to be saying it.
No, so is there anything you can tell us, really?
It's like there's a lot of story going on that doesn't need to be going on. Like, it's 2 hours and 3 minutes, and we're...
Oh,
yeah,
I'm done already.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that I feel like it definitely doesn't need to.
Yeah.
And, like, it's... I honestly feel like the drama going around it was more entertaining.
But that's really unfortunate.
It is, because there's so many talented people in it, and I love...
And I have seen a lot of questions on social media. If this much drama went around for a male filmmaker's movie, would it create so many headlines and go as viral? I think there is a question to be made on the fact that Olivia Wilde is a woman and her relationship with... I know he's a megastar, but...
But you know, I don't even think that it's her relationship. Like, realistically, if you're going to look at relationships between female directors and their stars, it's like Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Yeah.
And, like, his now wife is yep. like was directed him when he was, like, 17, and now yep. they're married. So yep. I think that's a lot more of a conversation than that. I don't think it's the fact that that is the issue. I feel like it's the Florence Pugh of it all.
And what's-his-face before Harry? What's your man's name who was meant to be in this before Harry? From Transformers?
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
It would be a lot better if Shia was Shia LaBeouf, and I'm not going to
really,
lie.
Really, is Harry the problem? Is he not a great actor?
Okay, so Harry Styles is, like, when I saw Dunkirk, I remember thinking he was the best actor in it.
But he doesn't do a lot in Dunkirk.
No, he doesn't, but I don't think he's a main character role. Like, he's like, realistically, he's still the lad from One Direction. Do you mean?
Yeah,
like, he's still, at first, a musician. And in smaller roles, sure, he can be great, like in... he's like in the end post credit scene of The Eternals. He's going to be like Thanos' brother in MCU.
Uh-huh.
Whatever that's going to be, do you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like this, where it's a serious role, you just see the fella that sings Watermelon Sugar, like, you know? And it's just... Yeah. But like, I kind of would think Watermelon Sugar would add it to something if he sang it during it, like, you know?
Okay.
But I Florence Pugh is fantastic in it, which I feel like it's overlooked in everything.
Okay,
like,
and then just tell us about the other couple. So, for example, who is Olivia Wilde's husband in that? Is that Chris Pine?
No, it's Nick Kroll.
Okay, Nick Kroll, yeah.
So then Chris Pine and Gemma Chan are like, Chris Pine's kind of in charge of the victory.
And then we have smaller roles as well. So smaller roles of couples in there too, I saw.
Yeah, there is a few, but it's kind of centered around the kind of main three couples. It's essentially Florence Pugh and Harry Styles' story, and Olivia Wilde then is like Florence Pugh's friend.
So it's called a psychological thriller, which is what I would call something like Get Out, and it has the kind of eerie quietness of a movie like Get Out, but obviously it doesn't have as much clout as something like that.
I feel like do you know the way when Grown Ups comes out and everyone's like, oh, it's Adam Sandler getting his friends together and they're making the movie?
Uh-huh.
It's that, but they tried to make a Get Out, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Rather than just like a stupid family comedy.
And they turned out not to be friends.
Yeah, but it was just so much drama.
And were the parts that you liked?
The first, like, I'd say third of it, I was actually getting into, like, the whole 1950s thing. It's not really something you see kind of now. So it was like an interesting, different way. And Florence Pugh, like fantastic. Like, you could watch her all day,
amazing.
So her doing anything, you're happily doing it. But when twists start happening and everything kind of starts crumbling, you're kind of like, this is not kind of sloppy, like, you know?
Okay. Talk to me about Olivia Wilde, a brilliant actress, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Booksmart, but it is on my list to see because so many people talk about it. So she's just a good filmmaker.
Yeah, she is, to be fair. Well, Booksmart is, I've said it before, is one of the ones that I just absolutely love.
Mm.
But it's not really a massive, like, the filmmaking is fine. Do you mean it's not like there's
a
bad shot?
It also looks
like
she's going down the cinema, you know, the cinematic route as well. That we're meant to,
there are some great shots there. Mm. Like it feels like you feel like you're part of the actual, like, setting. But you never, it's when it gets crazy, when someone like Jordan Peele, like for Get Out, for example, comes into his own and like can balance the thriller with the comedy with the you're terrified kind of, like, you know?
Yeah.
That's where it kind of falls flat, because you're never
terrified. You were never terrified.
You're never like more than, okay, this is a...
Would I be terrified though?
I don't think you would.
Oh, okay.
Be.
All right. That says a lot.
It's psychological, but I wouldn't say... It's like a psychological drama, really.
And did you ever have that with all the twists and turns and moment? Like, were you satisfied by the twists?
I feel like after watching something like Black Mirror, it needs to up the calibre, honestly.
Okay. And like, did you see the twists coming?
I didn't see what the twist would be, but like it's when big secrets get revealed, yeah, you're like, okay, that's interesting, but then what they do with it isn't.
Okay.
Do you mean? So it's like from like just over halfway through, you realize like all the things that are going weird, and then you find out what they are.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, so what? Okay, so how has this been? How has this happened? Like, you mean?
Okay.
It's.
You've been jaded. You're a jaded young man.
Yeah,
young movie reviewer.
I was excited for it, and I don't know.
It just did nothing for you. Okay. It's really hard to talk about these sort of movies when there's so many twists and turns.
You can't say anything.
You can't say anything.
But I have to say, like, because I saw it in Venice. You know how it is. Like,
of course,
you know,
it is.
But like, it is one of those things that whenever the film happens, like, you can always people like applaud at the end of it, regardless.
Are you the one that continued the 10-minute applause in Venice?
Well, see, they weren't there.
Oh,
don't worry about
that.
But it's always mad, because when a film isn't great, you can feel it in the applause. Oh, yes. It's kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they got a lot of applause, but it was very much...
Well, I think it's when...
Let's get out of here.
When they were there, they get the applause. Because it's still Harry Styles and Florence Pugh and Chris Pine, what you mean, and all of them. So.
Yeah.
But there is, there's better movies like Athena that I saw at Venice as well. I saw it on Netflix now.
Okay.
It's like my second favorite movie that I saw there, you know?
Okay.
So it was just fantastic. So I would recommend that. And Blonde was at Venice as well. And I've watched 2 hours out of the three of that so far.
Okay, all right.
And it's not
good.
Where would
Don't Worry Darling come on that list, numbers-wise?
Well, probably better than Blonde. Blonde was not great. But I'd say a 6 out of a 10. It's Florence Pugh is carrying, really. Harry Styles, I feel, he's just there because he's Harry Styles, realistically, isn't it? It's a stunt casting, essentially. And
poor Harry.
But if they had just had more fun, I've no problem with people getting together with their group of friends and making a movie. I love Grown Ups. I love things that are just their group of friends that they've always had making a 100%. You do that. They probably made it during COVID.
Girl.
Yeah, go for it. But trying to make something too crazy, you need to back it up, and they just don't. Okay. I mean?
So out of the 10 movies you said you saw, you probably give it a 6. Are we giving it a 6 Black Puddings wise?
I'll give it a 6 Black Puddings. No, I'd say, it was probably the second worst movie I saw in Venice, to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, 6. I'm pretty jaded today.
You are pretty jaded. Yeah. You're a cynical man. 6 Black Puddings, you knew that.
Yeah.
6 Black Puddings out of 10 for Don't Worry Darling. It is out in cinemas now. Enjoy. Thank you very much, Brian.
No bother at all. The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.